Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Our broadcasters are all ages and abilities. This is what makes us your local station. VectisRadio.com.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Movie Review Show with me, Tosin, and my friend Sharon.
Hello.
Now, this week... Hang on a second. Yeah, okay. This week, George Clooney makes a film that is pretty much the Coen brothers meet Catherine Bigelow's Detroit with Matt Damon and Julianne Moore in Suburbicon. Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell probably fall over a lot with Mel Gibson smirking in the background and John Lithgow gurning in the foreground in Daddy's Home 2. And in a first for this show, we discuss a trailer. But not just any trailer. Marvel Studios have released the trailer for Avengers Infinity War, the superhero movie that we didn't realize we've been waiting 15 years for, and it requires some discussion. But first, Sharon, hello. We've been on the show, well, I think I've been on air for like 2 hours now. You've been on air for the last hour or so.
Yes, I joined you at 5.
Yep.
Live at 5.
Yeah, but we got so involved in talking about, like, you know, boy bands and the cruelty of pop music.
Yes.
That we... how are you?
I'm well, thank you. But I did want to take this opportunity to give a shout out to my big brother.
Oh,
my
yeah?
brother Steve Bolland. It's his birthday today. So happy birthday, big brother Steve.
Happy birthday, Steve.
Yeah.
Have you seen the trailer for Avengers Infinity War? Because you should.
If he doesn't, I'll point it out to him.
Yeah, I'll be like, that's my birthday present to you as a tip. Go watch that trailer. All right, cool. And so you're a gardener.
I am a gardener, but I've had a week off, so I haven't been freezing my...
Unmentionables.
Gardeners have.
You're unmentionables, especially now on FM. You're very unmentionable. Yeah. Okay, that's good, because I was like, that was what I was going to ask. I was going to ask, what's it like if you're being a gardener in this kind of weather? Because I think it's bad enough being indoors underneath a duvet.
I've been a gardener for 4 years now, so I've got used to this time of year. It can be uncomfortable at times. The most, actually, you can warm yourself up. You can wear layers, so I never get cold. But you want to wear enough layers so that you can feel the cold through them, and then you warm up without sweating. You don't want to sweat underneath the layers this time of year. It just feels horrible. But the only thing I find is, even doesn't matter how good your gloves are, when you're weeding at this time of year or clearing patches of ground,
it cuts through.
It cuts through, and your fingers are frozen. So that's the only thing I'd say. Your hands kind of comfortable. Your hands do get very cold, but you can still. We work on right through all through the winter, doing different jobs. This time of year, it's, you know, you're tidying up your beds and your borders, and you're getting your shrubs winter ready. And midwinter, you do your fruit trees, and then you. Doing it sort of at the end of winter, you start preparing your beds for the new seasons and all stuff. So there's things to do throughout the winter, but it does get cold.
Well, like, you know, you see, we were talking about it earlier, and we were talking about the, like, you know, pop music and 90s boy bands and how they're all forgotten, and how
people take the fickle finger of fate pointed the wrong way for some of them.
Fill their heads with, like, you know, with dreams of stardom, and how, you know, you're going to be wonderful and girls are going to love you. And they go and have this photo shoot, and then you look at it even 5 years later, and you're like, my God, they look terrible.
What were you thinking?
And I said that was one job that I don't think I would ever do. Be in a boy band, no matter how much money they're paying, because 5 years later you're going to look stupid
and have nothing to show. You're going to live with that.
Yeah, and have nothing to show for it. You just added another job that I do not think I would want to do.
You don't want to be weeding.
I do not want to be a gardener in the winter. And if that means I don't have to be a gardener, I will have to live with that.
Yeah.
But good Lord, weeding with cold fingers.
It can be uncomfortable.
It's bad enough. We're trying to undo football boots with cold fingers. Can't feel anything. But
it is this time of year, it's good though, because when you do weed a patch or you weed an area, it's not going to grow back within a fortnight, because often we do cut houses once a fortnight. And in the summer, you weed a bit, and then you come back 2 weeks later and you can't see where we've been. And this time of year, you clear a bit, it stays clear till February or March. It's fantastic.
Okay, welcome to the Vectis Radio
Gardening Hour.
Vectis Radio Gardening Hour. For those of you who tuned into, like, you know, hear us talk about films, you are out of luck.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's go into films, which we're supposed to be talking about. So the first film that we're going to talk about is Suburbicon. And we usually have Sean here with us. And it's unfortunate that Sean isn't here, because Sean saw this film probably about 3 weeks ago.
Yes, he did see the preview of it.
Yeah, he saw a preview screening of this film 3 weeks ago. And I'd pretty much be telling him, don't worry, Sean, we'll talk about it next week. The film is finally here, and unfortunately, Sean cannot be here because he is driving some, was it Carisbrook High School students around? Carisbrook College schools.
Football team or something.
Wherever they're playing. Hope you guys are doing well. Sean, let us know how you guys did next week. And Suburbicon.
Yeah, because so you've seen it, but I haven't. So you can tell me all about it.
I could tell you all about it. So this is George Clooney's latest film. And one of the reasons we are talking about it with Sean is because Sean really likes George Clooney as a director. And George Clooney has done some good stuff
films as director.
Yeah, I think the one that stands out is Good Night and Good Luck.
Absolutely. That's the one I was thinking of particularly. It's almost like not a signature role piece because he's changed his style quite a lot throughout them. But I think that's one that stands out as being class, and it will stand the test of time, I think, that film.
Yep, I think so. I also quite like Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which he did with Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell, he's good.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell is really good.
He's underestimated, I think, but he's really good.
I think he's one of those people who's going to get an Oscar for some lesser role because people just realise, this guy's been good for ages and we haven't recognised him. But anyway,
Suburbicon.
So, Suburbicon is his latest director. And you know the thing that comes up with George Clooney is that you see that he's quite liberal, but he has a very sort of social consciousness to all of the films that he does. There's always something that he puts in there. He's either talking about politics and why is it that things are the way they are. He's talking about, like, Good Night and Good Luck was looking at the McCarthy era thing. And this is why Suburbicon is a bit of a departure for him, because it originated as a story written by the Coen brothers. And the Coen brothers, who did Fargo, who did No Country for Old Men and all that. So they
go quite dark, don't they?
They do go quite dark. And so the Coen brothers have, largely speaking, I would class what the Coen brothers do is that they have their comedies and then they have their more serious stuff. And their comedies are still dark. And the comedies that are... They're pretty much like, you know, the comedies tend to be like crime comedies, and it's about somebody who's really, really inept. Somebody who's really inept and trying to do a crime and trying to get away with it. And their ineptitude, and they're just, quite frankly, they're rubbish. And then the rubbish stuff just sort of like, it builds and it builds and it builds.
Yeah.
And that's why, and so this film started off as that, and then George Clooney got a hold of it and did some more writing. So there's four writers credited to this. There's the Coen brothers, there's George Clooney, and a guy called Grant Heslov, who writes a lot with George Clooney. He wrote Good Night and Good Luck with George Clooney and all that kind of stuff.
So that's a good start.
Well, it's a good start, but what you have is you have George Clooney's social kind of, oh, this is what we do. This is what we should do. This is the way the world should be. Things should be better.
Yeah.
You have that sort of social consciousness, and then you have the sort of dark comedy of the Coen brothers. And he's tried to make a film that smashes the two of them together, and you can see the join. You can really, really see it. So the film kicks off, and the film kicks off with a very sort of funny mock advert. That the kind that they had in the 50s in America, talking about, welcome to Suburbicon. Why don't you come over here and have a white picket fence and live with all those other people? We have a diverse... It's like that. We have a diverse neighborhood, and by diverse, they mean these people come from New York, these people come from Ohio, these people come from Florida, but they're all white. That's what they mean by... That's the idea of a diversity. And so you have this sort of thing that paints this picture of Suburbicon, and it's supposed to be like, you know, the American dream thing, the postman is walking along and everything like that, and
everyone's got their bit of garden, everyone's got their bit of land.
Pretty much that. And then it kicks off with the postman walking up to this house, and he sees two black, like, delivery men bringing something out of the house, and he's like, hi, he's saying hi to them and everything like that. Everything is nice and civil. Then he walks up to someone who stands at the door, and he's like, hi, I've got some pussy for Mrs. Myers. And it's a black woman standing there, and she's like, I'm Mrs. Myers. He's like, you've moved in. And it's like, oh my God. And then before he actually walks to the house, he walks past the first house before he gets to this house, and he's like, have you met your new neighbors yet? And they're like, oh, no, not yet. And then after he meets her, he goes to the house afterwards, and he's like, have you met your new neighbors yet? And so you have this whole thing where it builds up, and that's the first thing you see in the film.
Yeah.
It's like,
So now it should be perfect, but there's cracks showing already.
Well, it's a perfect, lovely, nice, civil, wonderful relationship neighborhood as long as everybody there is white.
Mm.
It will be. And then people come out, and this is where I mentioned about Kathryn Bigelow's Detroit, which is a film that was released earlier this year that goes into this whole sort of like America's thing with race and what happened during the Detroit race riots. And then there's bits of this film where people say things that you think, oh my God, you think that it's not out of place in Detroit. It's not out of place in that film. And as it goes on, you find that people have such a big deal about this black family being there that they start building a fence. They actually physically build a fence around their house. And they're out there day and night and they're yelling at them and they're not giving them any sleep and they're just throwing things because they're trying to drive them out of the neighborhood. And people are going and speaking to the news cameras and they're saying things like, you know, no. I think it's good. I mean, we shouldn't let them get above their station. They should know where they should be and all that kind of stuff. If they want to better themselves through education and all that, then yes, maybe. But no, what's the next thing that's going to happen? Are they going to want to marry white people? And it shows you this. There's just this horrible sort of twisted sensibility that, as we know, and I think this is part of George Clooney's point, is still available. Yeah. It's still prevalent nowadays but he's talking about America, so it's still prevalent nowadays in America, as we can see. It's still, that kind of thinking is still there. Then it kind of ditches that story, and then it goes into another story that pretty much has nothing to do with this story of the black family moving into the neighborhood. Because the garden backing, so the house that they've bought, the garden that backs onto their garden is a house that has Matt Damon in it, who plays a character called Gardner Lodge, who is married to Julianne Moore, who is one of a set of twins. And
oh, okay. I wondered where that came into it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then you have this, and if you watch the trailer for this film, you have absolutely no idea that there's anything to do with black people moving to a neighborhood.
There's no hint of that at all.
There's no hint of that at all. The trailer looks very Coen Brothers, very kind of
weird. Yeah, because I've seen the trailer a few times, and you know, that's what I based my opinion of the film on.
Yeah.
Was just what you see in the trailer. I had no idea there's those sort of ugly undercurrents.
This
place.
Well, the fact that it's for me, as far as I'm concerned, this is the Coen Brothers version of bit of the film.
Yeah,
this is the Coen Brothers version of the film, and so you have Matt Damon, you have Julianne Moore playing twin sisters, and they have a son called Nicky. And one day, he comes into the room and says, "Nicky, wake up! There's some men in the house." And then there's these guys who are just sort of standing there looking menacing. And he's like, "They're going to do what they want to do, and they're going to take what they want to take." And they chloroform the whole family. And when Nicky, the kid, wakes up, they're all in the hospital. And his mother's in a wheelchair. And they say that she was given too big a dose of chloroform and her organs are failing. So they go home, she dies, and it's all about... So you see a lot of stuff from this kid's point of view.
Mm.
As he's looking at this, and his dad is playing this... His dad has to go to work, and everybody's like, "Oh, we're so sorry for your loss," and all that kind of stuff, and all that. But it being a Coen Brothers movie... Have you seen Fargo?
No.
Okay, so Fargo is essentially a guy who tries to get away by kidnapping... He kidnapped his wife, and he tries to claim the ransom money. So he's essentially trying to make money from that. And this is pretty much... And I feel that the reason why I feel the Coen brothers did not make this film is probably because it was too similar to some of the stuff that they had already done. There are bits of this that are very Fargo. So it turns out that her death wasn't just so like, you know, a random thing where some people broke into the house and all that kind of stuff. It turns out that
got a huge insurance policy on her or something.
let me put it this way. Oscar Isaac shows up playing an insurance investigator. Because he's investigating. He's like, there's too many coincidences that led to this woman's death that just sort of make it seem all that. And her twin sister, it kind of like, you know, there's this whole thing where like the Matt Damon character tells his son, he's like, "Oh yeah, Aunt Margaret's going to be staying with us for a while, like just to help things out." And you start thinking, "Okay, what the heck is going on here?" So the twin sister's moving in, and this guy's going, and you start feeling, okay, there might be a plot here.
Yeah.
And so there's this whole there's there's pretty much two films in this. There's one film in which it's kind of like, oh, look, a 50s Americana. Look how, oh, no, it isn't actually all that great. It's not all that great because you have the seedy underbelly and all that kind of stuff and what's going on behind, which has been done quite a lot. I mean, American Beauty did something a bit like that.
Yes, it did.
Saying, oh, it all looks nice on the surface, but behind closed doors.
But you just scratch the surface,
And this is what's going on. And you have this, so, like, the innocence of this kid who's going with it. And you have a bit where the kid, the Matt Damon kid's character, plays with the kid of the black family that have moved in, all that. And you have a little bit of that, but that's about how far it goes for those two worlds to actually meet. And while you have all this pretty much comedy of errors, or comedy of ineptitude, because these people have tried to get away with a crime that they're totally ill-equipped to get away with. And it's just, and things just keep escalating and escalating. I try and do one thing to fix it and it doesn't happen, and nothing to get. And it's very kind of Coen Brothers. It's dark. It's dark. And these are the people who are known for having a scene in which somebody tries to get rid of a dead body by feeding it into a wood chipper.
Yes. That mental picture. It's like, yep, that's going to... Yeah.
and there's nothing as bad as that, but there's a scene that's very much like that when they're trying to do things, and how all the comedy comes from how stupid these people are in trying to get away with something. And at the same time as you're having that, you're having this story of this neighborhood yelling at this black family and doing all they can to sort of get rid of this black family. And there's a point that I do not think is very subtle that's trying to be made there. And I feel like it's a kind of film that, while it's not predictable in that you can sit down there at the beginning and go, okay, that's going to happen. But I feel like there's some reveals that they have in the film where it's kind of, you, especially if you watch the trailer, the way the trailer has been cut together, you figure out what's about to happen. You're watching it and going, oh, this is where that bit happens in the trailer, and this is where that bit happens in the trailer. And before things happen, it ends up almost a bit so, like, all too neatly done, and you can see the neatness coming. There's one particular bit that has to do with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah, which you've seen the trailer. You had a hint about what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, there's a bit with the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And the way they do it, the way they film it, I'm thinking, like, there's a way you could have done that could have made that a much more impactful way. And especially because the shot that I think they should have started with actually does show up. It shows up later in the same scene. And I'm like, oh, you could have made that better. So I can... And this is a film that has been lambasted by critics. People have been yelling about it. And it has been getting terrible. I think it has something like 24% on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that.
Okay, so that's not a good rating.
It's not a good rating, but I don't think it deserves.
No.
I don't think it deserves that. I think I would have liked to see one of these stories. I would have liked to see two films with each one of these stories in there. But I feel like the marrying of them, you can see the join. Yeah. You can see where we go from, okay, we're now in this film, and now we're in that film, and now we're going back to this film, and now we're going back to another. It's like changing channels. Like,
doesn't sit well together.
It doesn't sit well together. I mean, the point that he's trying to make, I think it's essentially saying, oh, well, everybody's worried about that being the... about that being the danger, and everybody's worried about saying, oh my god, they're black.
Yeah.
When that's not the point. The real point is that the real danger and the real monster is living right beside you. And it's, and looks just exactly like you, and looks like it looks respectable and all that. I think that is the very unsubtle point that George Clooney is trying to make with Suburbicon. So I feel like it partly works. It partly works. It doesn't entirely work. I think there's bits of the rioting and everything like that are quite visceral, but they're quite visceral and they're quite effective, and they're quite, well, as a black person watching them, I was just kind of going, oh my god, no.
Just stop that.
I like the sort of like the Coen Brothers bit of the film, which is just things happening, and it's terrible what's happening, but at the same time you find yourself almost sort of giggling and laughing. And I think the performances are good. I think probably the standout performance is Oscar Isaac for me.
He's actually, I first noticed Oscar Isaac as an actor in his own right through a Coen Brothers film, which was Inside Llewyn Davis. That was the first time I noticed him, and he looks completely unlike himself in that film. He doesn't, he's got the beard, and he just looks scruffy and a bit skinny and a bit,
yeah,
a bit, you know, plain. Where they sort of, in some of them, they sort of play up on his Latin good looks. He's, yeah, like,
they play up, it's like, oh, look at him, look at those smoky, really sort of eyes.
Smouldering. Oh, yes. Where in Llewyn Davis, he's absolutely not smouldering at all.
He's a bit of a waster.
But yeah, I first noticed him then, and that was the Coen Brothers film back in 2013.
Yeah.
So he's been around much longer than you think.
I first noticed him in Robin Hood, the Russell Crowe movie.
Okay.
He was Prince John in the Russell Crowe version of Robin Hood.
See, I hadn't connected him to that.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw him. I don't even know when that must have been, like 2009 or something.
Yeah, that was much before Llewyn Davis. Yeah.
But he's been building a steady body of work.
Yes, he has. A lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah, he's a very, very good actor. And I think he's a bit of a standout. I think Matt Damon's okay in the film. It's just that he the character he plays is really, really buttoned down.
Yeah.
And he does the, although you do get the feeling that there is this horrible dark undercurrent of, it's like, oh my god, I don't think I would like to know this guy, he's a bit weird and all that.
Yeah, this sort of boiling rage underneath the surface, or whatever you want to describe it as.
Yep.
I think a darkness lies beneath.
Julianne Moore, she's good as well. She has some beats of this character that are a little bit similar to a character in Kingsman, The Golden Circle.
Okay, yeah, where she was Poppy, the happy, smiley housewife murderer.
Yeah, because in that she's like, you know, she has like this sort of thing of, I think, was it, no, it was 50s.
Yeah, 50s America, yeah.
Yeah, she has this thing with 50s
The diner,
America.
Isn't it? The diner. Yeah.
And in this, in Suburbicon, she actually plays a 50s America a housewifey type person, and she has a lot of those sort of same beats.
Yeah, she can do that role very well. She was in Far From Heaven quite a few years ago now. She played that role perfectly then.
Yeah,
as this sort of suppressed suburban housewife.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she can play that role really well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but obviously, it didn't work so well for this one. Don't think?
No, I think it did. I think you just needed more of her.
Yeah.
I think almost the same problem I would have said with Kingsman: Golden Circle. I wanted more of her.
Mm.
I think you needed a bit more of her, and a bit more that she was in charge of her own destiny in some ways. Kind of like, I think I would have liked more of that. So I'll give it a 3 out of 5.
A 3. Okay.
I think
not as bad as some of the reviews would have us believe.
No, I really don't think it's. I was walking into this one, I was seeing some of the reviews, expecting that it was going to be like, you know, just a car crash.
Yeah, it'd be dreadful.
And it isn't. It's just two different films messily stitched together.
Yeah.
It's messily stitched together, and that's a
splice rather than a blend.
So I'll give it 3 out of 5. I think it's it's not going to make me say, oh, I'm not going to watch a George Clooney movie again.
No,
I just feel that it's almost like an experiment that just doesn't quite work. It doesn't quite work.
So just looking up some of the things that the Coen brothers have done, the last sort of Clooney Coen collaboration was with Hail Caesar.
Yep.
Which I absolutely loved. I mean, I know again that didn't score highly with the critics. I think some people just didn't like that whole Hollywood pastiche thing.
Yeah,
but I thought it was sort of note perfect. I thought for me it was just a great film.
Yeah, it was. And it's similar in that film. It's essentially a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of idiots trying to get away with a crime.
Yeah.
I think the Coen brothers do that. They go like, there's a crime and there's a whole bunch of idiots who are going to try and get away with it, and it's going to go wrong. You know that's going to happen. And that bit of the film I think is quite good. I think that there's two good films in here.
Yeah,
but they do not work together. They do not work together in the same running time.
But 3's fair.
Yep.
Sounds like three's fair.
All right, we're going to go away for some adverts, and we're going to be back to talk about Daddy's Home too.
Radio with the community at heart. This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Hello, and welcome back to the Movie Review Show. Now, just before the break, we spoke about Suburbicon, and we spoke about our friend Sean, who is not here today because he's busy ferrying a football team around the place. And so Sean is actually listening. So hi, Sean. How are things going, man? And Sean said that he would give Suburbicon a 3-2. I like this sort of like instant feedback that you get with being on FM and all that kind of stuff. He said he would give Suburbicon a 3-2. And now, so we say that this, he took Carisbrook College.
Yes.
And we want to give a bit of a shout out and congratulations to the Carisbrook College football team. I mean, Sean, if you can, let us know which football team it was, like whether it was the first, the second, the third, I don't know.
Yeah, what year, what age?
Apparently it was a tournament, and he says that they came third.
Oh, well done then.
Yeah, they came third. So, well done to Carisbrook College. And
as long as they weren't Well, there won't be three teams, so as long as there are more than four teams, then
as long as there's more than four teams, yeah, cool, well done, come third of the island, that's awesome. And to whoever came first or second, you didn't get in touch with us, so we don't care.
So,
well done to the Charisma College football team by Sean. And if you give us a few more details about that, Sean, we will we'll read out exactly what happened, tell us who scored and all that kind of stuff. And now we go on to the second Christmas movie that we have reviewed this year.
Yeah. Struggled through, basically.
Okay, I think that it seems to be quite low on the ground with Christmas movies this year. Actually.
Yeah, this is only the second, of a Christmas film that we've certainly reviewed. It's the first overtly Christmas film that I've seen, because I would think that we saw Paddington 2, which I loved, and I know you loved as well, Tis. Which was not an overtly Christmas film. It fits within the Christmas film mode because it's a film that the whole family could see.
Oh, but we also saw A Bad Mom's Christmas.
But you saw Bad Mom's Christmas as well, yeah. So that was our overtly Christmas film. And this is, it's a Christmas film. It's set at Christmas. All the action takes place around the Christmas festivities.
Yeah, and it seems like they've done something similar to what they did with Bad Moms, because Bad Moms, you had the first film that was set at a different time of year and all that kind of stuff, but it was all about, like, being a parent and relationships with them. That was about being a mother. Daddy's Home, the first one, was about a guy being married to a woman, and then the father of her first kid comes back in, and he's this sort of cool person, and he is really cool, and it's about how do you deal with being a stepdad when the dad is still around and quite frankly cooler than you.
That challenge, of co-parenting, as they call it.
And then they do the whole thing where they've taken that whole and they've moved it forward to Christmas. So have you seen the first Daddy's Home?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So tell us what you thought about the first Daddy's Home. What led you to go see the second one, and then tell us what it was all about and all.
Yeah, so as you said, the first Daddy's Home is about how you have this sort of chalk and cheese character. You've got like this uber male. Yep. Mark Wahlberg, who is, he's good looking, he's fit, he's strong, he's rebellious, he's got the motorbike, he wears leather, he's, he does all those things that this...
That you say, that tick the box, say cool.
That tick the box, like cool or masculine, he's like, and then you've got Will Ferrell, who does not qualify for, being, he's tall, but, he's not, he doesn't sort of hit those sort of masculine check things, so he's not aggressive, he's not... assertive, he's not dominant in any way, he's quite passive, he's quite easygoing. He would describe himself, he's one of those people who's in the friend zone in most of his relationships before he met this woman who had children from a previous marriage.
And so he
has come on the scene as the stepdad.
Yep.
And he couldn't be more opposite to the real dad. So in the first film, it's basically how they suddenly go into full-on competitive dad mode, like who can out-dad the other. One by being, the best friend to the children, one by being like,
the disciplinarian.
The disciplinarian, the sports the mad one. They almost have like provide a sort of different role model. But one of them, they're instead of, being the best parent they can be, they're just trying to out-compete each other. So at the end of the first film, they come to this accord, the best parent they can be is the one, is for their children. It's putting the children first, what they need, whether they need the supportive, disciplined or the ordered life, or they need this chaos of these two men out trying to outdo each other all the time.
Yeah.
And so they decide that the best thing for the children is to be friends, is to just share the parenting responsibilities. So some people will do, something, they share, they live with each other, the children sort of go between the two homes.
Yep.
But they don't compete with each other in front of the children, and they just have this accord.
Yeah.
So that's where we left off.
So it seems like you enjoyed the first one enough to go back for the second one.
Yes, it wasn't my first choice of film to see, but I tend to be one of those people who get, it's like with me in animation, you drag me in.
Yep.
And then when I'm in there, I actually quite enjoy it when I'm in there. And the same with comedies. You can drag me into a comedy, but it wouldn't be one I would choose myself.
Yeah.
So this is one of my friend's choice. But, we got in there and you are genuinely entertained all the way through.
Okay.
But the story is, it's Christmas, and the two chaps have been getting on really well. They've been, supporting one another in each of their roles as parents to these three. There's three children involved.
Yep.
There's Mark Wahlberg's got two, and then Will Ferrell, his character, has got one with the the same mother of the other two children.
Yeah, played by Linda Cardellini.
Yes. And then Mark Wahlberg's partner, she also has a daughter from her previous marriage. So there's four children.
Oh, yeah.
So they're all like stepdads. They're both stepdads.
Yep.
In a different combination. And so this Christmas, they decide they're going to have a great big family Christmas, and they've invited their two fathers have kind of come for Christmas. So Mark Wahlberg's father is a chip off, you know, he is a chip off the old block. It's Mel Gibson. You know, he's the, doesn't hug your son, he'll punch you in the arm.
Yeah.
And he'll, you know, tell you jokes about how, you know, picked up the stewardess on the flyover and how, you know, at different parts of his life, you know, his life has been sort of careering from
one misadventure to another.
And he used to be an astronaut.
Oh, yeah.
And so he'd like, you know, he's basically this.
So if Mark Wahlberg was like the alpha male, this is the uber alpha male.
The uber alpha male. And then you've got Will Ferrell's dad is played by John Lithgow. And, you know, he is like, if you have got the ultra male, then you have got the ultra, you know, in touch with his feelings male. And so where Mel Gibson talks about how, you know, he would pick up all the air stewardesses and that, he had this wild time in Dubai with Air Dubai air stewardesses. And John Lithgow said, well, whenever he flies anywhere, he tries to make as many connections as possible because then he can talk to as many different people on each flight as possible. And then...
Okay, I think, may I just say, first of all, great casting.
Yeah.
Great casting. Mel Gibson as like Mark Wahlberg's alpha bait dad, and John Lithgow, who we know can do Faye and Twee,
yeah,
as Will Ferrell's. I think it's great casting.
And the typical of their relationships is summarised by how they're greeted at the airport, where Mel Gibson, he sort of is stood on the escalator coming down with his bag slung over his shoulder, wearing like the black pea coat,
yeah,
and he's like smirking at all the air hostesses who are going up the other sort of flight.
Yep.
And he sort of comes along and he like punches him in the arm and it's like, how you doing? And then Will Ferrell sees his dad and he's like jumping up and down, dad, my dad's here. And then Jocelyn Lithgow wearing a bright red jumper, and he always wears a bright red jumper so I can see him in the crowd. And he comes down and they run towards each other and they embrace and they kiss full on the lips for more time than is necessary. It's this long, uncomfortable kiss between these two great men, and they're just like smooching basically, and they're just really affectionate while everyone else sort of goes, what are they doing?
Is that his father?
That's his father. And so there is this really sort of uncomfortably close when they're just very huggy, they're cuddly. And so they end up, again, the grandfathers then start being slightly competitive, whereas all the children call John Lithgow's character Pop Pop.
Yep.
And then so Mal Gibson says, hey, I'm not going to be grandpa or grandfather. You can call me El... Oh, it's gone out of my head. What does it call me? El Patron or something.
El Patron.
Something like that. I'm thinking, I have to look it up because I've forgotten it. It's just gone completely out of my head. I knew what it was. But it was just like, you know, that godfather.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, just call me that. Call me El Padro or something like El Padro. El Padro or something. I'll have to look it up. I'm sorry. I've just had
a
brain freeze moment. And so, yeah, they've got this converse relationship, and so they decide that instead of sort of spending the holidays in both homes or jetting between all the different houses, they're all going to go on holiday together to this holiday resort, and they're going to live in this huge log cabin together, and that's where your misadventures begin.
Okay.
As they have this most disastrous Christmas we could imagine, with these four adult men in the house, these two women, and the four children, all, you know, trying to fight for their own space and for their own moment in the sun.
Well, okay, so with something like this, I think, like, okay, so Bad Moms, I said that with that. The film started off, and I felt like it had a point talking about how stressful Christmas is for mums, and then it becomes like your typical Christmas movie, because Christmas movies, you have to have that bit where it's not quite okay. No, yeah. Like where it's like, oh, we're going to try and get Christmas together, and then it's all the stress and it comes down, and before there's like a resolution at the end or something like that. So because, you know, Daddy's Home had this whole idea, or this needle of, at the heart of it, it's at what I think is a pretty good idea of what do you do when you're trying to be a stepdad to the kids, and then the other dad shows up, and how do you handle that? It had that at the heart of it, which I thought was, okay, that's actually quite good. But so do they manage to keep that central theme throughout the whole film?
Yeah, I think they do they're one of the sort of, if you take away all the froth about it, the other thing is about, you know, almost like being true to yourself.
Yep.
It's like saying, you know, each piece of person has their own secrets, they have their own weaknesses, and we may look to everyone else and think, well, they've got it made, they've got it sussed, mm-hmm. they're the perfect this, but the other. But to someone else, you are the perfect person.
Yep.
And I think it's like stripping those layers away, because like each of the characters, we all think, no, he's the best dad, no, he's the best dad, no, he's the best granddad, but each one of them are hiding something.
Yeah.
And they've got their own flaws and weaknesses, and like the two perfect, the mums, they have this like, she, one of them thinks the other is like the perfect mum, and the other thinks, no, no, she's the perfect mum, and they actually both see that they're both hiding,
things.
Okay, so there is an undercurrent, you know, that they're, you know, that you can't be envious of other people all the time, which is what they all are sort of slightly doing.
So it sounds like there's actually some depth to this film.
You have to to dig for it.
it's really, really deep. It is really deep.
About, you know, not always assuming that everybody else has got it sussed, because everyone else, and then secrets are revealed in different relations or different part of the characters, that things they've been concealing, where they think they've got this perfect life, and uh-huh. actually they've been pretending and they've been concealing things that are not perfect and not good.
So how in your mind, how does this stack up to the first one?
I think it compares well. That it was funny. Genuinely, it was funny. There were funny moments most of the way through the film. It had good interviews. So I never felt that the film lagged. It was genuinely entertaining. And at the end, they have this typical sort of Christmas smaltzy scene where they all sing, "Do They Know It's Christmas?"
Oh, dear.
But in a setting that you didn't necessarily see it coming. But yeah, so it had that Christmas moments where everyone's like going, "Oh, and I love you," and hugging, "Oh, and I love you too," and hugging, and "Oh, I love you," and hugging.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of hugging and squeezing at the end, and to the tune of, you know, "Do They Know It's Christmas?" So it's got some of it's got like that sentimental schmaltz, but it was genuinely funny. There's quite some scenes where we did both, me and my friend who I won't say with, we both laughed out loud. And yeah, we enjoyed it. So I wouldn't say it's a film that would, you know, you wouldn't not watch It's a Wonderful Life in order to watch Daddy's Home 2 at Christmas time in the future. But it was certainly entertaining, and you get what it says on the tin, basically.
Yeah.
Well, you know what you're going to get with a Will Ferrell Christmas film. Mm. It's going to be funny, it's going to be silly, it's going to be slightly cringy in places, but it is going to be entertaining. Well, so yeah, I would say give it a 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5. So there you have it. This is a very average week.
Yeah.
it's an extremely average week. And if you needed anything else...
But a good 3, not a begrudging 3.
No, begrudging 3. But still a 3.
It's still a 3.
It's kind of like, because it struck me as the kind of film that you would have on in the background on a bank holiday or on a Sunday afternoon while you're cleaning the house or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that. It's like a wet John Lithgow kiss of a movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of kissing between Will Ferrell and John Lithgow in this film.
All right, cool. So, all right, we actually have the trailers of both of these here. So if you needed any help to actually help you decide, okay, what should we watch? We're going to play both trailers. We're going to play Suburbicon first, and then we're going to I think we're going to play that first, and then you're going to tell me what you think about that compared to what I've said about it now, whether it sounds different to you. And we'll do the same thing in Daddy's Home, too. So first up here is Suburbicon. Ah. Wrong mouse.
Nicky? There are men in the house. These animals took everything from us. I have to make decisions like what's best for the family.
Nicky?
Would you like a cup of coffee?
I could have you killed in no time.
I could kill you, too.
So that's Suburbicon.
Yeah, that does not... It's not the film that you described.
It sounds a lot darker. Well, it is dark.
You'd think it's more funny. Just a full-on thriller, really.
It sounds a bit like that. And, but yeah, okay, now here's Daddy's Home too.
We're back with more daddies!
Look who's here!
Dusty and I have this co-dad thing on lockdown.
In fact, best friends.
We're like boys to men.
Brad, stop.
I don't get the whole girls thing.
You walk right up to her, give her a smack on the caboose.
I don't think that's appropriate.
It's a holiday tradition, Mr. War, on Christmas.
Why does a duck have feathers?
To cover up his butt quack.
Hey, kids, I got a good one for you.
Two dead hookers wash up.
Daddy's Home too.
Okay, you see that, even for the interplay between John Lithgow and Mel Gibson, yeah, that alone funny. Makes me want to see that film. Yeah. That alone makes me want to see that film. Because I think that those two, they're old hands, they know how to deliver a line and everything like that. It's just, anyway. All right, cool. So now, we're going to, the final thing we're going to do on the show, we're coming towards the end, and before we go to the news, is something that we haven't done on this show before, because we usually stick to just reviewing films. However, last week we spoke about Justice League, and Sean and I were not that impressed with Justice League. We really weren't that impressed with the film. And this is a film that is supposed to be a shared universe that has been chasing after Marvel. Marvel essentially have the shared universe that everybody else is coveting. Yeah. That everybody else is going after. The Spider-Man, Iron Man, Captain America, everybody wants what they have managed to do, that shared universe, over the past 15, 20 years or something like that. And yesterday, it's almost as if they waited for Justice League to be released, have its day in the sun and everything like that. And then they released a trailer that had me...
Now this is how you do a shared universe trailer.
That was exactly the tweet I sent after I watched this trailer. I watched this trailer and I was like... This is how you do it. I'm watching the trailer and already, I know it's a trailer and everything like that, but I already feel like this trailer is better than the Justice League movie, quite frankly. And it pains me to say that, but I'm looking at the trailer and I'm just thinking, I want to know what happens. I want this film to be released right now. And I'm just going to play a little bit of a snippet of this trailer that was released yesterday, just the beginning. Obviously it works better if you can actually see it and you can see the pictures and all that kind of stuff, but even just the sound, for anybody who's been watching any Marvel movie over the last, I feel like it just gets you some, it tells you something, about
it takes you to the next level.
It takes you to the next level. Okay, so here we go.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people to see if we could become something more. So when they needed us, we could fight the battles
that they never could.
Feel so desperately that you're right, yet to fail all the same. Dread it. Run from it. Destiny still arrives.
Evacuate the city. Engage all defenses and get this man a shield.
Fun isn't something one considers when balancing the universe. But this does put a smile on my face.
Oh my god. Sorry, that is just unbelievably epic. Okay, so obviously it works a lot better if you can actually see the pictures and all that, but I think even just the sound,
yeah, because we have that recognition, haven't we? We hear those voices and we think, oh listen, that's,
yeah,
what's his name,
that's Nick Fury, that's Samuel Jackson,
yeah,
that's the Vision, that's, you hear these characters,
yeah,
because you've,
that's
seen
Black Widow, and that's, yeah, they're talking about. Yeah. Hey, they're talking about Captain America. We don't see him, but they know who they're talking about.
Once
bring
say,
that man a shield.
And get this man a shield. Once you hear that, you straight away know, oh my god, they're talking about Captain America.
Captain America.
It's like, and I feel like this is, I just think, what they've done with Marvel, and how they've, I keep saying it, I am so impressed with what they've done. I'm so impressed that they've managed to keep it going for so long without messing it up.
Yeah.
Because I feel this year we've seen The Mummy.
Yes.
Which came out, which is supposed to be the beginning of a shared universe. It died on its face because they were trying to run before they could walk.
Yeah, they were trying to throw everything at it, and it didn't work.
It just didn't work. You have the DC universe, which, I'm sorry, just not working.
Yeah, you just don't have that character recognition already, and then suddenly they're saying, hey, we're going to put these six characters in this one film.
Exactly.
We don't know who those people are.
We haven't been building up to it. Like, for instance, you had the bad guy in the Justice League movie, Steppenwolf, who was supposed to be this, oh my god, he's so horrible, we all need to band together to defeat him. You didn't get that sense, but like, Thanos in the Avengers.
We've seen him coming.
You've seen him coming.
For a long time
you've
now.
You've been hearing this building going on. He first of all showed up in the first Avengers movie. It's been building up for like 7 years. 7 years or something. And so, you know, when this guy shows up, you're like, he's going to be, this is bad news. And I just feel like, and okay, you have the Transformers. They're trying to go on with their own shared universe, and they're trying to get like, spin-offs from the Transformers movies, and I'm sorry, but they can't even make one good movie of the Transformers. I mean, they just, before they try and do it, it's just rubbish. It really, really is just rubbish. I mean, next week we're going to get on to talking about our best movies of the year, our worst movies of the year, movies we wish that more people had seen, movies we wish that less people had seen, and it's, we're going to do that. So we're going to do that next year. But I'm just saying that there's all these other people trying to build shared universes, and Marvel, I just going, look, guys, this is the way to do it.
This is how you do it.
You need to take your time. And the fact that this film, I mean, this trailer is probably the most excited I have ever been after seeing a trailer.
Yeah.
I think
you're ready for this film.
I am ready for this film. Needs to appear like tomorrow. It needs to appear tomorrow, because I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, I think I'm more excited about this film than I have been about any Star Wars movie.
Oh, wow. It's like, that level of, hey, I'm ready for this.
It's that level of, and it might be a bit embarrassing to say it. It might be a bit, but I actually felt like goose pimples coming up on my skin when I was watching this trailer. I was like, oh my God.
I want this film to come now.
I mean, and it's not just because I've followed these characters since I was a kid. It's because of what they've done with the films and how they've built them.
I think they've taken the pattern or the model of the comics, haven't they? Because these characters didn't suddenly become like crossover characters. They had their own backstory. They had their own existence. They had their own, almost like a fan base.
Yeah.
Before they said, actually, what would happen if we got these two characters to meet?
Yeah.
And I think, you say, they walked before they started running and then before they started doing gymnastics and skipping.
Yeah.
And so I think DC have just tried the gymnastics and skipping stage without establishing the provenance of these characters. I think these films have got their own provenance, haven't they? You've got the Iron Man, you've got the Hulk, you've got Thor, you've got Captain America. And then even if you didn't watch any of the other films, if you only watched, because I haven't seen any of the Hulk films, I haven't seen any of the Iron Man films.
Oh, yeah.
But then I know who they are.
Yeah.
Without having seen the films, I know they have their own history, their story. And so when I see them in, like, the Avengers, I get who they are.
I'm so impressed.
And it works, doesn't it?
I am so impressed with what they have done with these films. I'm so impressed with what they've done with those films. And I think that the same way people sort of study in business school, how BlackBerry and in position...
Yeah, it was the phone to have.
Yeah, it was a phone to have, and then they threw it away because they didn't do things. So how Blockbuster used to be everywhere, and now it's disappeared because it didn't follow what Netflix did. I think people are going to, as a business model, look at Marvel and look at DC and say, why did Marvel do well while DC did not do that well?
Yeah.
I honestly think that.
But because they took the steps at the right time.
Yep. I think
they thought 10 years ahead, didn't they? They were thinking, we can't just get this massive film now. We need to work on it and build up that foundation.
Okay, we're out of time. We're going to have the news, and then we're going to welcome Brian in with the eclectic mix this evening.